My name is Mary Jo Lemon. I was born at St. Joseph Hospital in La Grande, Oregon in 1944, February 12, 1944. So I'm 61 years old.
And you've been in Union County for
all my life.
60?
Well, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I'm born and raised here, so I took a year off and went away to college.
We're going to be talking about your experiences as they connect with the values that people like you and others in Union County lived by. I think this is particularly of interest because you grew up at a time that I would call transitional, between a time when values that many people were held were quite stable. Everybody probably understood pretty well what the orthodox procedures, beliefs, attitudes were. The lines tended to be fairly clear on moral matters, on the role of the Christian churches, the role of schools, the role of politics. All of these things, for the most part, in this country, were fairly stable during about the first half of the 20th century, succeeding from the 19th. And you were born and grew up at a time when all of these things started to change. So I think many people would say that while there are traces of these values left, there has been so much change in attitudes toward work, in attitudes toward sexual freedom, and so on, that we are in a time now that contrasts rather markedly. I'm not primarily interested in pointing out the contrast, just having you recall from your experience how these values shaped your life and probably that of many others. And could we start with the childhood games that you remember playing? You moved to Oak Street when you were six, I think, having been over on the other side of the tracks earlier. You probably remember a little more from the time you were living on this side of the tracks than on the other. But what games do you recall children spontaneously playing?
Well, in the summertime, we were all outside. I mean, we were just outside all the time, playing in the water.
Essentially unsupervised?
Well, Mom worked, and she had a babysitter for us because I was 6 years old when we moved up there. My sister was 8, my brother was 10, and my baby sister was a baby. She was born when I was 6. So we had a babysitter, and but we were still outside playing, and all the neighborhood was, and once in a while a parent would come out and check on us, but I don't remember a time when we did anything harmful either to each other or to the neighborhood. We'd play baseball on the corner. We play tag.
These were pick up baseball games,
yeah,
not organized by adults.
No. We played tag. We didn't have Little League then, remember? And
right.
So anytime, I mean, it was up to us to entertain ourselves. We didn't have television. My parents didn't get television until I was going into probably junior high or high school.
Well, if you could think of a particular day that might remain in your mind.
Well, mainly it's just playing in the water, putting our bathing suits on, putting the sprinkler on, playing in the water. We had chores to do, so I remember we'd get up in the morning and we'd fix breakfast and we'd do the dishes, and Mom would go to work and say, okay, when I come home, I want this done, and this done. And she eventually got so she wrote it down. Mary Jo, you do this. Libby, you do this. Ron, you do this. Even if there was a babysitter there, we had things we had to do. And so when we'd get them done, then we'd go outside and play.
All right. What were some of these chores?
Make the beds. Do the dishes, pick up the living room. In fact, all the years that my mom worked, we essentially did the housework. And
Was there any reward or punishment suggested for doing those things?
No.
Why do you think that you went ahead and did them?
Because my mother asked us to. But if we didn't do it, she probably, well, I'm sure she got upset with us, but we weren't getting an allowance. I did at one time get an allowance because Mom said, rather than work outside the home, why don't you just keep house for me and I'll pay you what you would make at the hospital or somewhere else. And
this was when you were a little older.
Yeah, a little older. Well, so I clean house every day. That was my job. And
with a vacuum cleaner?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just really cleaned every day. And when Mom would come home from work, she'd put her coat down on the chair, and I'd pick it up and go hang it up. And she'd sit down, and she'd open up the newspaper, and then she'd put it on the floor, and then I'd pick it up. And about after 2 weeks, she fired me because I was driving her nuts, and she was driving me nuts because I was working my tail off to keep house. And, you know, so... But
no, I don't know. Don't tell me.
Well, I mean, you know, it was...
Were you getting resentful?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because it was too much work?
Well, I was just, you know, you'd work hard. Can you imagine working hard and having that house spotless? Someone coming home and messing it up, you know? I mean, it was... I was getting paid, and okay. I was also picking up after.
Well, maybe that was just a personality quirk. Looking at what other children were doing, did some of them have parents who worked outside the home?
Oh, yeah.
Did they have a similar arrangement about doing chores?
You know, I don't know, because a lot of my friends were on the swim team, and I don't know about...
You're skipping into, I think, into teenage years now.
Yeah, I was a teenager when I did that.
But previous to that, you and your siblings were doing housework when your mother went to school routinely?
We did all of it.
Yes.
Yeah, we did all the cooking.
Well, that meant that you couldn't go out to play until that was done.
No, it was done.
Was it the same with the other children? Did they have to stay home too until they finished their jobs?
I suppose. I don't think I paid much attention.
Well, if there had been a difference, I would have think you would have talked to them about it and say, you might have said, we're the only kids in this whole block who have to work at home. How come you don't?
You know, I don't know, because we'd get up in the morning, do our chores, and then go out and play. And I suppose that everybody had chores. It wasn't that important. It's just something we had to do.
Well,
I think that I don't know for sure that other kids didn't have things to do, but I would think at that time in our lives, in 1950s or so, or that everybody had chores to do, and kids started going to work early. I started working out of the home when I was 15 years old. Mm-hmm. We all had jobs, and I can remember my friends talking about they worked in a restaurant, or they worked at a printing shop. They worked at the swimming pool, but we all got jobs when we were out in the fields, big time. A lot of the kids worked out in the fields picking spinach when they were 12, 13 years old.
So in effect, it was assumed that children, as soon as they were able to do it, would work either for their parents or for money outside the home.
Yeah.
And since you don't remember talking to other kids about it, it must have been normal for everyone to do that.
I never questioned the fact that I had things to do. My mom worked. My dad worked and wasn't home a lot because he's a railroader. And so we helped Mom out. And Dad explained to all of us our responsibility is to help Mother out. Mother was bringing home a paycheck that was buying our groceries, and, you know, I suppose if I lived on a farm, I'd be working on the farm. So,
yes.
I think Terry worked in the furniture store mm-hmm. when he was little. Even when he was old enough to pick up things and carry some responsibility, I think he helped deliver furniture. So, I mean, it was just expect nobody sat around, and I started cooking at a very young age. All of us did. And if you cooked dinner, you didn't do the dishes. That was the rule. And so I loved to cook because I ate the dishes. But I can remember cooking, and Mom.
When you were about how old?
Oh gosh, I remember standing on a stool stirring gravy before we ever moved up there on Oak Street. But I can remember Mom saying, putting meat out for dinner and telling us what she wanted. And if I needed to go to the store, I walked down about 6 blocks to Joel's Grocery, put the food in the cart, and charged it. Went home. Walked home. That was, or I'd send my brother to the store.
You learning to cook largely by trial and error?
Oh yeah, I'd watch Dad. Dad was a wonderful cook, and I'd watch my mom. By the time I got married, I was a really good cook. My sister was a good baker. She'd love to bake. And she's a very good cook. Kathy, my younger sister, didn't cook as much because she was the baby. You know, babies don't cook, but we all learned.
Did you know children from other families who were doing a similar thing?
You know, I don't remember that it ever came up, but I'm sure that the kids I was in school with and the kids I graduated with probably all did their share. It was never something we talked about. I think it was just taken for granted that you helped out when you could.
What, generalizing a little bit from your own attitudes toward having to do this work, what do you think were the prevailing attitudes among young people about the need, the responsibility, the inevitability of their starting to work when they were quite young?
Well, I think they liked it. I think kids liked earning money, and I think that if they worked, they bought their car or they paid for their gas. I used my money to buy clothes. I helped. That was helping my parents out. It was never a problem when I was old enough to go to work. I was excited about it. And I worked at the hospital for what I thought was pretty good wages, but now, of course, it was next to nothing. But I was so proud of myself and bringing home a paycheck and paying Social Security. Everyone thought that was great. And my mom was happy when I got a job. I worked in a motel. I worked at a printing shop. And
some of these kinds of work, whether they're at home or in some other place in the community, involve certain kinds of risk, safety questions. What seemed to be the assumption about young children's ability to conduct their lives so that they were safe most of the time? Physically and otherwise?
Well, I know that some nights I worked at the hospital, I got off at like 11 and my mother and dad would either pick me up or Terry would pick me up, but I never walked home at night. When I dated Terry and he wasn't old enough to drive, his parents took us or we walked. You know,
were they taking you because of safety considerations?
I think so. Well, I don't know. Maybe not. If you ask them, maybe. I always thought it was because they didn't want us walking in the dark. But
That was a matter of safety, probably.
Probably.
Were there enough incidents around town of people being accosted or assaulted or whatever it might be, burgled, so that one needed to be worried?
You know, there really wasn't. The only thing that I can remember maybe reading about was fighting, maybe somebody drinking too much, getting in a fight. We didn't have drugs then. When I graduated from high school in 62, I hadn't even heard of cocaine. I hadn't heard of some of these drugs. There was liquor, yes, and kids drank. And I had classmates that drank a lot. And the police would stop you, and you had an open container. He'd pour it out and say, "Get your butt home." Didn't, unless you were so visibly drunk, and he'd probably put you in jail. Of course, I never had that problem because I didn't drink. But they're just you know, everybody was happy. It just, there weren't the drugs problem. There later, it came out later, and I just can't remember kids participating just on drugs other than the alcohol, and I think that was a problem. I had several classmates that became a problem with them later in later life, but and I think I remember a class a few years ahead of me, a kid was killed. And that just really shocked everybody, and it was alcohol related. And it was just a real rude awakening that maybe there is a problem. And he was a son of a very well-known prominent family in town. And it just shook everyone up. And they still talk about that.
The fact that it was so unusual.
Our parents were still talking about that. When my mother died, they were still talking about what a shame that was. And I think it really jostled this town. You know, but I don't remember locking our doors at night.
When you say jostle the town, you mean people became
really
more fearful about their children's welfare?
I think it brought
welfare.
Them to an awareness that alcohol was a problem. I really do.
Well, of course, that had been going on in the 20s, Prohibition time, in probably more egregious ways than later.
Right.
So, as you were saying about the 7th, 8th grade and with other kids, your parents wanted to take you and pick you up from going to a movie. Otherwise, were you free to walk around town?
Yeah, my parents had sat us down and talked about shoplifting and how important it was that we didn't do that.
How did that come up?
Well, I think that probably kids were doing it. I remember coming home and telling my mother that I was in a store with my friend, and my friend took something.
So we shouldn't romanticize the time and say that children never did anything bad.
No, and we were in high. We were in. I think we were. See, we had a 4-year high school, so I think I was a freshman then. And my mother. That don't ever go to town without money. And she really didn't want me to ever go back to town with that gal again. But I can remember I could go to a movie with the girls. Now in high school I ran around with about 30 or 35 girls, and we had a mother that would take us all the time downtown for Cokes, and we all went. If one couldn't go, another went. I never went by myself. Anyway.
This wasn't a gang, was it?
No. It was just a bunch of girls and a bunch of boys. And when we got into junior high, the parents of all those kids, and there were a lot of kids, were all popular kids in school, and we weren't a clique. I mean, a new student coming in, we were nice to, you know, introduced ourselves, you know. But we were good students. We were popular students. But the parents of all those kids always had something on the weekends for us, even in the summertime. And those parents started the dances at the Armory. It was my parents. And all those parents got together because they wanted to keep us active on the weekends and yet out of trouble with alcohol, because I think that boy having that car wreck really shook him up. And he was like, he was older than I was. And so they had things. They had picnics. They had things at the park during the summer and had games, and there was always something that these kids could do. We even did This Is Your Life, and it's different kids, and they'd rent a room down at the Armory, and they brought treats, and then they had Saturday night dances. My parents and the Fists and Tuttles and all of them, they got together and they arranged for music, and they rented that thing on Saturday night, that Armory, and they were at the door to check the kids for alcohol. And if they had alcohol on their breath, they kicked them out. And we had those Saturday night dances till I graduated from high school. And my group of parents, those group of parents, are the ones that organized the first graduation party, all-night graduation party. 1962, it was at Greenwood School, and we had live music, and it was Terry's band he was playing in. And we had a party, and those parents organized food all night coming in and everything because they wanted to keep everybody out of trouble, and they did. They kept us active, but I think because alcohol was a problem with the kids, and my brother had a class, he graduated with the alcohol was a problem for a lot of the kids. And so I think that even though Dad wasn't home a lot, when he was home, they tried their best to make sure that we got good moral values, that we were, you know, safe, and we went to church on Sunday as a family. It wasn't Mom and the kids. Dad was home, they both went. I helped teach Sunday school and
switch specifically to the time when you first started going to Sunday school. This was the St. Peter's Episcopal Church. Do you remember how a typical class was set up, what you did?
Yeah, we gathered, all of us of all ages gathered and sang for a little while. And then we
hymns,
and we sang to this old pump organ of my grandmother's that she'd given to the church, and it was downstairs. And then we all went to our little respective areas because it was just one huge room. And we had a teacher and taught us Bible stories. And
how was that done?
Usually through instruction.
Well, I know, but
teacher getting.
Did the teacher read a passage from the Bible, or
sometimes,
was it retelling?
Sometimes, and
the Bible?
Then she would tell us about some of the things that would, like the Good Samaritan and those type of things. So I learned a lot of the stories of Jesus. Didn't learn a lot about the Old Testament. It's mostly New Testament.
I suppose that the teacher might tell the story and then make sure that the moral of the story was clear.
Yeah. And sometimes we worked in a book.
Were there any participation from the students?
Oh yeah.
How did
you
participate?
Ask questions. Well, she'd ask questions, we'd answer. Or we'd ask questions and she'd answer.
Like, do you remember the name of so-and-so in a story? That kind of question? Or would it be a question, why did
so-and-so
do
this? Well, if she was teaching us about the Good Samaritan, then she'd ask us to see if we were learning anything. She's always checking on us to see if we remembered anything she was telling us. And then if we had questions, we could ask.
You remember details of what she had said?
Sure, right. Details of the story.
Well, how did she get around to having you draw some conclusion from the story?
Through discussion.
Did she ask you to come up with examples from your own experience?
I'm sure. Because you always want to relate it to everyday life. Mm-hmm. And then I was also in the...
Before we leave that, then.
Okay.
What did you observe about the responses of the other kids in the class?
Oh, everybody responded. Everybody, you know, it just... I was with a fairly large group of kids, and... I remember a lot of discussion. We'd do crossword puzzles that maybe had to do with the theme. We did... we had art. We had time for art. We didn't have communion upstairs every Sunday, so sometimes we never went upstairs. And then we'd have snacks. So it'd be, you know, instruction, music, instruction, and then art, and then snacks.
What sort of art?
Painting or whatever it went in with the theme of the story. Always had to do with the theme of the story.
What happened to the art after it was completed?
I hung up on the walls.
And then
parents could see what we did.
Okay. Was it supposed to be some other indication of what you had learned?
Sure. Usually it was from whatever the objective was of the lesson. And
how do you think that you and others carried over whatever you were learning in the Sunday school classes to other parts of your life?
Well, I don't think I did as good a job as I could have. But years later, I reflected back, and I think it helped make me a good person. I think when it's time for my kids to go to Sunday school, I can relate some of those things.
Well, would it be kind of at the level of the Golden Rule?
Do unto others, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Were there opportunities, or did the teacher make opportunities in the class to say, last week we talked and learned about the Golden Rule, where it came from and what it means and how people can carry out the Golden Rule in their everyday lives. Now this week, I would like each of you to give me an example of something you did this past week that showed that you applied the Golden Rule. Do you remember anything like that?
Yeah. I do, and I think we all participated in that, but you know, you can't help but gain or reap something from your Christian education.
Well, that's certainly the assumption.
Absolutely, and then if you were raised at home with good, strong morals and values, that just kind of, it was like a boost to it. It just reinforced what was being taught at home. And then I had a grandmother who was almost a saint. In fact, they called her Mrs. St. Peters. And she, if I was going to say something cruel, she would stop me. And you know, she was just such a nice lady, and so I loved my grandmother, and so I wanted to be like grandmother, but I never was. But she reinforced that too. And
did you have any way of knowing what was being taught to children in other churches in LeGrand or in the county?
When I was in high school, I belonged to a group called Tri-Hi-Y, and it was a religious group. And we just studied other...
What did Tri-Hi-Y say?
Tri-Hi-Y. I don't know what it stands for to this day.
Three high school...
I don't know. It could have been Trinity. You know. But we visited other churches.
The adult service or the Sunday school?
No, the adult services. And I was in Rainbow. And in
I
Rainbow.
I was part of Eastern Star.
Yeah, and so we visited a church.
Eastern Star was not religious, though, was it? Or did it have
Masons?
Religious?
I have no idea.
Well, it had some pseudo-religious elements anyway.
Yeah. And so we visited a church once a year with Rainbow, and I was in Rainbow a long time. My mother was in Rainbow. My grandmother was Eastern Star, so that I came from a background of Mason. But in this group, I only was with them a year, but I did visit other churches, and I did was able to sit there and compare. Well, we don't do this, and we do this differently. But it was amazing that the Lord's Prayer was the same in every church, and the little song you sing when you take the money to the altar, and all the churches had altars.
Praise God from whom all blessings flow.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And they
the
all
doxology.
And all the doxology, and they all had altars, which now they don't. And that's not, and when I go to those churches, which my daughter belongs to one now, that's the part I miss. There is not an altar. We prayed for other people besides ourselves. Mm-hmm. We prayed for the President of the United States. We prayed for our troops. We prayed for the poor, the sick, and the hungry.
In all churches, you mean?
In all those churches. Yeah. They don't do that now.
How did you, what impression did you have about the importance of the differences among these churches? Were any of them large enough to make you think or give you the impression that there was some kind of contradiction or rivalry between churches?
No, I didn't. It made me appreciate my church more, because some of those churches were pretty scary.
Because?
Because there was a lot of shouting and crying.
They were demonstrative about their
very pain. Crying. Yes. And there was no makeup. And of course, in high school, I loved wearing makeup. No makeup. They would actually get down on the floor and roll.
Yes, holy rollers.
And I just stood there with my mouth open. And I dated a minister's son for a year of the Gospel Tabernacle Church in Marin. We dated for a year. And I went because he asked me to go. And it was just complete opposite from little St. Peter's ritual to their church. And yet their church was so strict in the clothes you wore. You could not watch TV. You could not wear makeup. You could not dance. And at the prom, he couldn't invite me to the prom because they couldn't dance. But we went to the Honan Hall next to Craig's Cleaners and watched a Disney movie and had dinner served. I dressed up. Yeah, I had a corsage. But we watched The Living Desert. And Bob played basketball, and his father would not come and watch. And Bob liked Hawaiian music, and I got him an album. And the girls had hula skirts on, and his father took that off the cover. Took that cover off the album.
No, you're telling me this because this illustrates something.
This illustrates a complete difference.
Yes.
Not only in their service, but in their way of life.
Do you have any way of being aware that for adults, many adults, these differences were enough to arouse hostility?
No.
You sure?
I didn't feel hostility at all.
Is that there was a time earlier in Le Grand, I know, that the Catholics were viewed with almost horror by many people in the community.
I didn't feel that at all. I didn't feel that at all. My babysitter belonged in his church. So I was aware that there was this faction over here. But it made me appreciate St. Peter's all the more. It made me love my church. Because this was such... I was so horrified. I'd go when I was little with the babysitter and put my face into her skirt. And I remember doing that. And go to my church where everything was just, it was this way. You know, the ritual, the candles, the cross, the acolytes. And I go, oh, so calm, so calm. And go back here, and when I dated Bob, went back. And the kids could, I used to feel sorry for them because the kids couldn't go to movies. They could bowl. They could go bowling. Or they could park. And there were a lot of pregnant girls in his church. And he talked about that.
They could park, you mean, have sex in cars?
Yes. They could, I mean, what was left for him to do?
Yes.
It wasn't that somebody gave him permission. It's, you either go bowling, you couldn't watch TV. And his father was in the war and confiscated some films from the Germans. And on his father's birthday, I went with him, with his son, to celebrate his father's birthday, and he got out those old movies, and they were shooting the Americans and watching this. And I sat in horror and watched his dad just, you know, so excited over these films, and this was my life. And I went home sick to my stomach because I saw for the first time they are not living what they preach. You couldn't go downtown and watch films, but you'd watch something horrible like that. That was horrible what I saw. And so I thought of them suddenly as being hypocritic. And it just made me love my church even more. So by the time I was a junior in high school or sophomore in high school, I loved St. Peter's. Mm-hmm. Terry's parents belonged to the Christian church, and they had their service, and it was nice. Been to that. I've been to the Presbyterian, been to the Methodist. Everything was nice. I thought I could, you know, I could get along with all of those. But this one church over here is the one that really, and yet I have friends to this day in that church that are good people.
Do you think this might have been your unique reaction and it wasn't shared by many other people?
Might not have been. Might not have been. But it made a believer in my church.
Yeah.
It totally did.
What I'm trying to get at, though, is your perceptions during that period of the amount of harmony or disharmony among the various churches in the county.
You know, I don't know. I don't know. I just, you know, I can't remember churches not getting along. I guess I never even thought about it. We lived across the street. The Episcopal Church was across the street from the Mormon Church, and it was a big cathedral type. And the only thing we argued with them was the parking. And we finally came to an agreement. And the only reason I know that is my mother talked about it, because my mom was on the vestry. And they had approached them that we try to get our services at different times so that we could have parking. And we were so glad when they put the newspaper there and took that church down, and, you know, because we had parking. But as far as problems with the Catholic Church, no. When I was growing up, I knew that there were black people in La Grande. I had no problem walking down the street, and they didn't bother me. I went to school with some boys, black boys, and I never, ever considered it a problem until we went away to a game and kids started making fun of the boys. And did it really dawn
on me? In another county?
No, in another city, Baker, Oregon.
That was another county?
Yeah, excuse me. And they started saying awful things to him, and it was a real rude awakening.
So can you say that as far as you were concerned, and maybe your friends, you were not aware of any sort of racial or religious prejudice?
I'm sure they were there, because in later years, Mom would tell me stories about things that went on. We had a black family in La Grande that the father fathered children from, and how awful they thought it was. I remember being scared to death and had dreams for years about there was a black man in La Grande that owned a shoe store down in the pictures in Harris's office. But it was a shoe store down by where McGlasson's is now, the next door to it. And he had a peg leg. And he used to walk around that peg leg. And I had nightmares of walking by and him grabbing me. That's the only...
Was that your hypersensitivity?
I don't know.
There was no actual threat?
No, but I had that dream. And I took care of them in the hospital and loved them. They were funny people. They were nice people. They had a good sense of humor. But years later, Mom and Dad talked about some of the things. So we had a Ku Klux Klan here.
Yes.
So I know there must have been a problem, but...
No, it wasn't particularly.
I don't know. If I was sheltered, maybe I was.
There was some boycotting of businesses encouraged by the Klan, but it only lasted, the whole organization only lasted about a year and a half.
And then I remember Mother telling me one time that when I was born, Dad wanted, or one of the friends wanted, or told me it was Dad, if I was a boy, I was going to be called Jack Allen Peck. And my mother's friend said, you can't call that baby Jack Allen Peck, because that was Jap. This was during the war in 1944.
What was Jap?
My initials would spell out Jap. So you see, there was that prejudice.
Mm-hmm. Was fear.
Yeah, we had a neighbor next to us who was German. Very German name, and I could barely understand her. And her daughter lived across the street and was a school teacher. And nobody in the neighborhood could get along with that daughter. She's German, too. Well, anyway, I remember Mother and Dad talking one night in front of us kids about the man that owned the grocery store. It was an old man. Refused them to let them go into his store. Wouldn't let him buy groceries there because they were German. When he died, his son called them up and said, I apologize for my father's actions. You are welcome to come anytime. But I can remember my parents talking about that. So you know there were prejudices And I guess I wouldn't have known about him if my parents didn't communicate with each other once in a while and come home and talk about it. But I think, I don't know if my dad was any different than most men, but my dad held grudges. If he didn't like the father, he didn't like the kid. And so I had a hard time getting him to like some of my friends because he didn't care for the dad. And it didn't matter. The father was no good, so the son was no good. I told my husband when we got married, I'll never do that with my kids. And I never have. I try to hold grudges. I believe in forgiveness. And I used to talk to my dad till I was blue in the face. Don't you believe in forgiveness, Dad? You know, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I love Dad dearly, and he was unique and special.
The fact that he worked for the railroad, was he a conductor or a brakeman or what?
He was a brakeman. And then years later became a conductor.
A passenger or freight?
He did passenger for a while. And
that's the one where there's a more predictable schedule.
Right.
And on freight, it's very
and
unpredictable.
And then freight. So he was unpredictable. He made it to some of our things. He made it to our graduations, and he made it to some of our concerts because I participated in a lot of music. But Dad got a uniform and a conductor's hat. We had that for a long time. And when Dad passed away, we got it out, and it was just full of moth holes. I was just sick. So we took the buttons, and we have all the buttons and everything on it. But he even ate into his hat. But he...
How exactly did his irregular work schedule affect family life?
Well, when Dad was home, we towed the mark, let me tell you. He didn't stand for any sassing, and I was probably the worst because I was the middle child. I probably fought more than any of them. And
was his response?
Well,
to,
we had spankings, you know, Dad.
Punishment.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. You know, it didn't.
Did you hear of other children being spanked for similar reasons?
You know, I never heard about it from my
friend. Is that something you kept
friend.
Secret?
I guess so. I don't know. We never thought. We just thought that was the way things were. I don't know that I ever. I probably was ashamed of it and wouldn't have told my mm-hmm. girlfriend. But there was a point in time when he didn't spank me anymore. You know, when I was probably junior high.
I got that was
because I was
a result of his particular temperament, or was there something about that kind of work schedule that made him more edgy?
Well, it made him more edgy because, you know, he would work and then come home to sleep.
Probably never get enough sleep.
Not getting enough sleep. And so, you know, and he'd be cranky and trying to sleep during the day. And so, but...
If that was the common pattern when he was at home, why would you feel affection toward him?
Well, I don't know. He was a loving father also. He
other moments were better.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
I wasn't afraid of him. I just, you know, I wasn't an easy child. I mean, I sassed, and probably like most kids, I guess. I don't know. But I don't think I was a perfect child.
With
all of us 2 years apart, there was a little bit of bickering, you know. With my sisters, and I had a sister that, older sister that never did anything wrong. She never did anything wrong, and I used to resent it because I'm the one that got in trouble all the time. And we've talked about that later and laughed about it. But
well, I think these are parts of normal family relationships.
She says I learned by watching you, Mary Jo. You know, but
were there certain special arrangements that had to be made because of your father's work schedule? as to what could be done in the house, for example, or what the family could do together, or
when Daddy was home and in the summertime, and he was home and he was not going to be working for 24 hours, we pack up a lunch and do a picnic, and or we'd go to church and then go for a ride after the picnic and maybe go get a hamburger afterwards or something. It was the day we were all looking forward, but his ride sometimes took us to hell and gone because we never knew where he was going. It's always a surprise and sometimes scary.
You mean he said we're going to get in the car?
Go in the mountains, oh yeah. Some of Dad's...
Maybe this is his idea of how to
relax
the family.
How to relax, yeah. And we went on a lot of picnics, pack a lunch, and before we moved up on the Oak, we used to pack the horses and go up on the mountains, and...
Was this common among other families?
I don't know.
Didn't you ever meet them out on any of these trips?
You know, the families didn't, because there wasn't Little League and all these, the families didn't participate a lot together. My folks did not have a lot of friends. They had family. They had my mother's family, my dad had his family. If we got together, if anybody, it was family. But they didn't have, once in a while they'd have somebody over for cards. But they never had friends over for dinner. The friends all didn't get together with their kids, except like on a Saturday night at the Armory. You know, that type of thing. We do this now, call up our friends and bring the kids and we'll have, you know. My folks didn't do that. I don't think people did that then.
Could part of that be because many people had longer work hours, 6 days a week, 10 hours a day?
It could very well have been. You know, a lot of the mothers did not work then. My mother was an exception. And if my friends' families got together with their other friends' families, I didn't know that. Maybe we were excluded, but I don't think so. I don't remember my friends saying, going places with their other friends' families. I just don't remember that happening.